I'm Jeremy Greer.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this is Days of Future Cast, the podcast where Gary and I cover every single issue of no, that's not what we do here. We just talk about X-Men stuff. We're not committing ourselves to covering a bunch of X stuff. We were just talking about X-Men 97.
Yeah, we kind of talk about what we want to on this show.
That's it. Yeah.
And even though that the show came out, you know, last year, we got plenty of time before season two comes out.
That's true. There's been a bunch of delays. There's a bunch of Marvel stuff that's been happening. Like, I still haven't checked out the new Spider-Man cartoon yet. I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah.
For good stuff.
Same. I've heard good things too. I heard that gets good. Yeah. And it made the right people mad.
Yes.
People were mad because, like, no, it's very important that Norman Osborn is white. It's very key to his character.
It's key to his character. Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. 100%.
White icon. Absolute Caucasian icon. Caucasian king.
Has to Norman be. Icon. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I saw some people complaining that, Spider-Man, like, I'm just so tired of him, like, constantly running out of time and struggling with the balance between, you know, his personal life and being Spider-Man. I'm like, dude, just read anything else. Like, do anything else besides Spider-Man. Like,
that is the Spider-Man comic. And the comics suck whenever they get away from that. Like, every once in a while, a writer will be like, what if Spider-Man was the CEO or something? And it's stupid. It doesn't work. Spider-Man CEO of, like, you know, Spider Industries or whatever.
What if Spider-Man was the king of Mardi Gras? Let's do that for a weekend.
Nobody likes it. Speaking of MCU stuff, just to put this in context, we're recording this shortly after Captain America 4 came out. Yes. Before Thunderbolts or Fantastic Four come out. And neither of us saw Cap 4.
No.
At some point, you probably will. Mm-hmm. But I had something about it. You brought that up in the green room. There's something I want to mention about it. I'm not excited about that movie, and I believe people who are like, oh, it's the same old shit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I feel a little bit bad for the position that Marvel's in with that shit, where everything, they're constantly having to redo stuff.
Okay.
Like, it's a miracle that anything good comes out with, when you have like this, you know, you have the Jonathan Majors shit that happened. Mm-hmm. And then, with Captain America 4, they're supposed to introduce Sabra. Sabra's an Israeli character. She's a mutant. Like, that was going to bring, you know, it was going to add mutant ties and stuff. And they just had to completely rewrite it to make a character named Ruth, who has nothing.
Ruth.
Ruth.
Is she really a golden funny. Girl? What's her superpower? Baking casseroles? Like, what are we doing?
She's an expert babysitter. They show, like, the McDonald's toys or whatever. You get to see, like, Ruth. And it's just a lady.
Sorry, and I didn't know that wrinkle about this. I thought they just removed the character altogether.
So. No. She's still in there. So you have all these, you know, stuff that's done way far in advance, the script and everything. And then you have, like, contracts, like the actress probably doesn't want to get cut, you know, and might have stuff, you know, with her agent and that. So you just have to be like, well, what can we do just to change this completely? Like, that shit's hard. Yes. I'm not saying that, like, you have to feel bad for this multi-trillion-dollar industry or whatever, but, like, I'm not surprised if subpar shit's coming out of that.
Yeah.
You know, like, how would you do it?
And also, like you can see the opposite of that, where they don't have to do that, but they go, but it still happens, right? Like, I don't think you watched Secret Wars with Samuel L. Jackson, but, like, it, you know, that show is just a fucking pile of shit, like, just absolutely incoherent pile of shit. And it's because, like, they spent zillions of dollars on casting and then, like, had to rewrite, and we're basically rewriting the show on the fly. I think we're finally getting to the last stages of this, like, weird in between Marvel stuff, where, like, this kind of stuff keeps happening. And I think they're finally getting back on the right track. Like, Thunderbolts looks good, Fantastic Four looks good, and it looks like they may have a little bit more of a cohesive vision with this stuff. But yeah, like, also at the same time, like, I don't really feel bad for Marvel, like, but there's probably a huge number of creative people, not to mention that actor, like, that, you know, put all of themselves into this stuff only for, like, you know, forces beyond their control to interfere, and they have to chop a movie up or remove characters or rearrange things or whatever. And so they end up, like, I'm sure Samuel L. Jackson doesn't care at this point because he got paid, but, like, at the same time, like, you want to be proud of the work that you do. So I'm sure he's, like, looking like, oh, well, you know, I was the coolest motherfucker in the MCU until I got my own show. And then my show was the lowest rated thing on Rotten Tomatoes.
Now I'm radioactive.
Yeah.
You know, and you think of that actress being like, oh, I get to be Sabra. Like, and, you know, maybe she did research and learned all these cool comics Sabra was in.
Yeah.
Like, Sabra's not huge or whatever. And I'm not saying any, I hope it should be clear, I'm not saying anything about Israel here.
Yeah.
You know, but the
wild turn on the Days of Future Cast podcast to reveal our political leanings.
we've been gone for a minute and we've been doing some thinking.
And we've got some opinions about it.
We got some opinions, baby. But the Yeah, I just had a moment of empathy about the whole thing. Like, sure. Yes, I don't want to see it, and I believe it's shitty, but also, like, I don't know. I also was glad that it did good money just because all the chuds were mad about it because of Black Captain America.
Yes.
And that's so stupid. I've read a couple, you know, Captain America comics since then, and it's like, oh, like, Falcon is Captain America roughly half the time, it feels like.
Yeah,
since 2005.
Since Falcon was, like, a major character, like, I feels like that's been happening.
He's been around for a very long time. We've had, you know, Black Cap is not weird.
No, not at by any stretch of the imagination. I am excited. We're on the precipice of new Daredevil too. The day we're recording this is the day before Daredevil comes out. Autumn and I were looking for, like, a background watch, and I was like, and she was like, hey, you know, we haven't seen Daredevil in a while. So, like, flipped on Daredevil and watched the first episode of the Netflix series. And we were about probably 5 minutes before the end, and there's, like, a lengthy fight scene, and Autumn's just like, is this show just kind of miserable? Like, I remember it being fun, and like I remember it being funny, and I was like, no, this show is just, like, him struggling and, like, a, like, 20-minute fight scenes that don't ever have an edit point. And she was like, well, why do I think it's being funny? I was like, because the last time you saw Daredevil was in She-Hulk, where he was, like, cute and fun and a flirtatious, like, he was in a sitcom. He does the Walk of Shame. Like, but we can watch She-Hulk if you want to, but, like, that's not what Daredevil is at all. No, so.
Daredevil is a comic about bad things happening to Daredevil. That's the entire point of that character. It's the same thing with that Spider-Man thing. Like, people just be like, oh, man, I'm sick of these bad things happening to Daredevil. Every once in a while, they do a comic where Daredevil's, like, on top of the world, but nobody likes it.
No, not in the
least. Not what the character is.
At least. But I'm very excited about them bringing the new characters back and everything like that. I have a feeling they're going to do my girl Karen dirty. Like, I feel like that's going to be a major major kind of plot point.
Well, she doesn't do well in the comics, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And I kind of feel like they're going to, like, that's going to happen pretty quick. But they're also doing, like, a Punisher one-off, like a Werewolf by Night situation, which I'm, like, I really enjoyed Werewolf by Night. I don't think we ever, like, talked about it a lot.
Yeah.
But I really dug it for what it was. And, like, I think that's a great way to introduce characters of just, like, here's an hour, right? Like, of cool stuff. Like, you kind of know them already, but, like, here's the basis for this character, and let's roll. Like, let's get out of here.
Here's a story without needing to connect to other stuff. That shit's sick.
I think I pitched this to you a long time ago, but I would love to see them do that with the X-Men and have
with each X-Man.
Yeah, like, introduce, you know, Cyclops doing the high school thing and Jean Grey, like, losing control of her powers, or even, like, Wolverine, like, you know, meeting the Hulk or whatever, and then, like, have an X-Men movie, like, not have to, like, build up a huge Cyclops movie, right? Like, we don't need a $30 billion Cyclops movie, but, like, a $5 million show would be great.
That'd be great. So. The other thing that is in Marvel news that I want to mention real quick before we get to the episode, there's all this rumored casting for X-Men now. Mm-hmm. I don't know who any of these fucking kids are.
We're too old, Gary. We
way too old for rumored casting. I keep seeing YouTube thumbnails, and it's like three identical looking fresh-faced kids.
It just looks like Hollywood and teenagers, like, to me. I can't tell them apart.
What if this was a Havoc? And I'm like,
I have no idea.
I'd have to see him in motion. I don't know what that doesn't look like anything to me.
The only one that I saw, and I texted you about this, was somebody proposed Mads Mikkelsen as Magneto.
Yes.
And Mads has already been in the MCU, which is really easy to forget because he's such a weird non-sequitur.
Eye makeup.
Yeah.
Shitty magician with eye makeup.
But he's such a non-sequitur in Doctor Strange. But, like, I think he would be great as Magneto. I think he would be, like the only thing I would be worried about with him is, like, I've never heard Mads Mikkelsen yell about anything. Like, it seems like he doesn't have, like, and he probably does in real life, has, like, a voice that can really, really project. But, like, most of the things I've seen him in, including one movie where he doesn't speak, like, he's been just very quiet, soft spoken throughout. So
it's a bold new direction for Magneto. He doesn't talk. He
doesn't speak. Yes.
He doesn't talk. And if he talks, you get money.
But yeah, I'm the same way. Like, I don't recognize any of these people. But also, like, you know, I watch, you know, I see clips of the Oscars, and I'm like, I don't have any idea what any of this stuff is anymore. Like, I feel so disconnected from everything.
It's kind of refreshing.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of enjoy it. Like, just like, none of my business.
leave me out of it.
Leave me out of it. What is our business? Is X-Men 97.
Yes. And we're here to talk about the sixth episode, Life Death Part 2. This aired April 17th, 2024. It was directed by Chase Conley, written by Charlie Feldman, Maria Wilson, and Ashley Alvarez. Storm is forced to face her worst fears in order to free herself. Somebody was having a lot of fun with the alliteration on that.
They really were.
And they forgot to mention Xavier's part in all of this. IMDb.
Xavier is fully half of the episode. is Shiar Xavier stuff. This episode, we were going to record this before, and one of us was sick. We've been having health stuff. You more so than me, not comparing our Pokemons. So I ended up watching this again, is my point. So this is the only episode of this series I've watched three times. And like the first episode, you know, I want to know what happens. All good. Second episode, I was like, the storm stuff I think is a little boring and repetitive. Visually neat. Uh-huh. The Xavier stuff, there's something here. On the third episode, it was the worst that it could be for me. Some of the Xavier stuff feels really good and righteous. It's very funny to think that the millennia-old Shiar Empire never considered colonialism.
Yes.
Until an Earthling decided to come and be like, what if this was bad? And they're all like, fucking hey, he got us.
Yeah, can bird people have white saviors? Is the question we have to ask ourselves.
It's kind of amazing. Like, it's all like, it reminds me a lot. There's a comedian I really like named Kyle Kinane.
Yeah, I know Kyle.
Who I think is really funny. He had a thing where he's like, you know, in this political climate, like, people come out here and a lot of times comedians stop telling jokes. And I don't want anyone to come home from my shows and be like, hey, well, how was Kyle? Was he funny? And they're like, not really, but he said a lot of stuff I agree with. And like, it's that.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's like, does this make tons of sense? No, it's a lot of stuff I agree with.
Sure.
You know, so that there's an energy in that feels good, but it's a real simple carb, I think.
I think this is probably the low point of the entire first season. And I think that they probably... I don't think any episode could have really, like, realistically followed the previous one and remember it.
No.
Because, I mean, it was such an explosive episode. It was such a huge thing. And then, like anything that you do after that is going to be, like, a letdown and almost, you know, it's just going to be difficult to follow that up. Like, not everything can be, like, that consistent high. And so I think they actually probably did a good thing by, like, positioning this episode, which, to me, is... the two most boring parts of the X-Men universe, which is Shiar bullshit with Xavier and like Storm's issues with claustrophobia or whatever. Like, I know that's integral to her character, but like also like, it's just such a, I don't know, like a lot of people are afraid of small spaces. Like, do we have to revisit this all the time?
It's pretty boring. And the very fast forwarded love plot.
Yeah.
It was wise of them to just not do an immediate sequel, to like, just go check in on other parts of the world.
Yes.
You know, and have the news impact at the end of this. Like, the end of this episode's really strong.
Yeah.
I think.
I think it's really good. I think there's a lot of the stuff, like the writing in the Xavier stuff is actually really good. It's just, you know, around bird people, which I'm kind of essentially over with.
Yeah, so. Hard to care.
Yeah, you know, yeah. Also that, yeah.
Very difficult to care. So like, last episode was huge. Go ahead.
I just wanted to be like, you know, the Guardian and Xavier having like a political podcast was not in my like X-Men cartoon bucket list. So.
I will say, seeing Guardian do Guardian shit with this better animation style, like, even, you know, Superman is like cool when Marvel does it. Like, I liked watching the action of that.
Yes.
His you know. So last episode, as we mentioned, real big episode, Genosha was attacked by Sentinels. Gambit died. You know, a bunch of nerds on TikTok cried.
Yes.
However, Storm has been hunted by a owl demon. Not a dowel demon. That's a different kind of demon.
Yes.
An owl demon.
only haunting woodworkers is a dowel demon. Yes.
The dowel demon is after the dowel Jones, the demon. And we also have Xavier. In the last episode's revealed, he has been healed by the Shiar.
Yeah. And we get some new intro stuff. I think it's been a while since, like we talked about, it's been a while since we've recorded. But I think the Nimrod stuff in the intro is new. And there's also like some Xavier and Lilandra stuff in there that isn't in this episode, but also like is just new for this. Like, again, like we've talked about this before, of them using the intro as kind of like almost little, just like, you know, little picture scenes of stuff that happens. Yeah, stuff that happens
in
the universe. And we start out in space, and it's a space battle, and it's the Kree versus the Shiar, which are two of my least favorite things. And then one of my other least favorite things, which is Deathbird.
Deathbird
crashes through the main ship's window to kind of take over from the Kree, to fight the Kree. But shortly behind her are the
Imperial Guard.
Imperial Guard, thank you.
Yeah.
And this is actually super fucking cool. Like, I actually really like this from this point on. So
there's some deep cuts in the Guard. Yeah. Not only do we see Vulcan there, which is cool, the third Summers brother, but like, I remember having the official handbook to the Marvel Universe, like those old comics that were just like glossaries of characters, and reading about the Imperial Guard before I ever saw them in comics, and just be like, who are all these weirdos?
Yeah, like, what is their deal?
Here's 30 weirdos. You know, and like you get to see these weirdos in action doing their weirdo shit, like their actual things.
The 2025 version of that is just buying Tekken 6, right? Like
it's exactly. Or going to any convention and just seeing like if you see a character, they're probably from League of Legends, and that shows that my reference is like 10 years old.
Yeah, or watching a DC cartoon, like who the fuck are these people? Yeah, like I have no idea.
Is this guy?
So the animation and the fighting is really, really good. Like it doesn't.
It's really good.
It's not really long or anything. Like we're not doing a whole lot with it, but it's just very cool. Like if you don't know. And I think that's one thing this show excels at. Even if you don't know who any of these people are, like it doesn't give you don't give a shit. Like you're just having a good time watching it. Yeah. So
the action of the show is consistently very good. Yeah. The Kree are just being jobbers. They're set up. Ronan gets his ass kicked.
Yes.
By Deathbird. However, a little sniveling worm comes up and says, "I have to interrupt you, Deathbird, for a message from your sister." And Lilandra sent out a bunch of little worm men with holograms to announce her wedding.
Yes.
To everyone in the universe, apparently.
Which are not invitations, by the way. Like, no. These are just the announcements. Yeah.
It's a save the date, and it was worth interrupting this fight for.
Yes. Very, very funny to me. And it's a long thing about how, like, as you know, addressing the entire fucking universe. Like, I'm sure, like, a lot of people don't know you guys took Xavier in at the end of the 1997 cartoon. Like, I don't think...
It's very funny.
But she talks about, like, we've been, you know, healing this dude, and we had to because he helped us save us from my brother who went crazy, and also from the Phoenix. And now he has unlocked the secrets of my heart.
The ultimate challenge.
And as she talks, we actually go to where she is, so we see her in the flesh, and as she's talking about Xavier walks from behind her. That's correct. Xavier is walking in this full bird armor.
The worst art, like the fucking Shi'ar Empire where cool costumes go to die. Like if you're in the Imperial Guard, you can look cool. Whenever they give Xavier a space outfit, it's the worst fucking thing in the world.
Well, just for the...
He looks so bad.
The color schemes, right? Like, this is like a weird, like, mauve and yellow situation. And if you think, like, oh, I've seen mauve and yellow work together, not like this. This is the equivalent of the hot dog theme in Windows 3.1.
Like, it is a hot dog theme.
I'm dating myself by saying that, but absolutely.
Yeah, very much so. And the bird people and miscellaneous weirdos, I love, we keep cutting over to aliens, and so they have like six faces, and there's all these horsemen working the fields and shit. Like, again, good, just like the Mojo episode, good episode for weirdos.
Yes.
Are really shocked because it's a Terran.
Of course.
He's from Earth.
Yeah.
Here. And we cut back to kind of backstage in the garden where Xavier and Lilandra are talking about this and talking about basically it was for a little bit for show, a little bit of like, you know, jingoism, like patriotism, and kind of talking about behind the scenes of this, like, will they accept me, you know, as a Terran? I would like to go home and visit my family, introducing this conflict between the two of them.
Yeah.
Lilandra is saying like, hey, if you're going to be with me, you have to be with me. Xavier still has a foot in his old home.
Yeah.
You know, and...
Describing families as black holes, because he's just like, I just want to visit, and she's like, yeah, but then you'll probably just end up staying. And Xavier has to respond like, didn't your brother almost destroy the universe? Like, who are you to like judge me about family? And to compromise, I guess her version of a compromise is like, just send him a wedding invitation. But you know, you need to stay here and kind of did as you earth and like play the peacemaker. And Xavier pushes against this, saying like, I didn't know we were pretending. And she's like, being a leader is pretending. Like you have to constantly pretend. And during this, like this conversation, we learn that like the armor is what is allowing him to walk around. Right. Like, so this is also a way of pretending. And she kind of chides him and like, you know, the virtue of a teacher is, you know, knowing when to let them walk on their own. And he says something like, only if you have nothing left to teach them, which I don't think that's the way that teaching works. I feel like you just let them go when they're still learning stuff. Like,
you don't have to get all the achievements. Like, you don't have to 100% teaching.
I don't have to 100% Cyclops before I let him go.
Like Cyclops percent. Like, I completed the Xavier School Cyclops percent. Awesome genes done quick.
Yes, I love it.
This is their conflict. He looks out into space, and we cut over to the B plot, which is like tied because it's about love and colonialism as well. They sneak in a little colonialism into the B plot. But one of the reasons why I think this episode doesn't work that well is I don't think these stories are very good together, play off each other very well.
I mean, like they're not. They try to like there's a couple of lines where they try to tie in the colonialism thing, right? Like, and I just don't think that they're really that well connected. And also, like, they're so grounded in different things, right? Like, it's not like it would be something different, I think, if Storm spent this entire episode thinking like, oh, I want to get back to the X-Men. I need to get back to the X-Men. I need to recover my power. But that's not the thing. Like,
no, it's about Forge. It's exactly, about their love story, which was like, unlike the Xavier, you know, part of the reason why they did that opening credit thing was to show you like, hey, no, Xavier had a relationship with Leandra beforehand.
Yes.
Like, we didn't just come up with this now. There was an episode about it in the old show. You just don't remember it. This just happened,
mm-hmm.
you know? So Forge is very sick. He's got the demon bite. And Storm tends to him, and the demon owl taunts her the entire time. That's like the majority of this plot is Storm's voice actress talking to herself, tempting her to do bad things.
It's a lot of demon owl. Like, it's a lot of demon owl. And like, I feel like, you know, demon owl comes over for like dinner, and then like it's like 10 o'clock, and you're like, we're out of anecdotes, demon owl. Like, we need to
look at the clock.
Yeah. Like, why are you still here? Yeah.
You need to slap your arm and go, well. And then that's in time for the demon owl to take off.
One of my bosses invited all of his employees to his house, and he had this like $1 zillion house in the hills of Phoenix or whatever. And he invited us all for a dinner party one night. And of course, you know, me and Autumn show up and do the thing. And one of my coworkers shows up and brought like all four of his kids, which was not like. Like the invitation didn't say like kids not welcome or anything, but also nobody else had kids there. So like, you know, but also like
a little weird
childcare being what it is, blah, 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 blah. So, and like we ate dinner and like had a cocktail and we're like, okay, see you later. Bye. And so the next day I'm running around with my boss or something. And I was like, oh, you know, thanks so much. You have a good time. He's like, man, I'm glad you left when you did. And I was like, why? It's like, well, so-and-so they didn't leave until like 11:30. And like me and Autumn left at like 9. And I was like, what did y'all do for 2.5 hours? He goes, Jeremy, it was the worst. Like they just wanted to, they just wouldn't leave. Like we kept hinting and they would not leave. And I was like, Jesus Christ. That's so horrible. Almost like watching this episode. No, I'm kidding.
Part of the reason why this plot doesn't work for me is the demon owl is teasing Storm, the adversary. Mm-hmm. You know, just let him die. You're not even an X-Men. Traps her in a small box for claustrophobia, and then starts going into the stuff that I don't think track was laid for. He's like, you fear being alive. And the whole theme of this bit is going to be that the adversary is saying, yes, the device made you lose your powers, but you are holding yourself back.
Yes.
And Storm says, oh, you know, I confess, I even said to Jean Grey, I wonder what it'd be like to be human. That's it. Like, you didn't do anything really bad, Storm. And that has not been, like, you have not been a focus character of this before you lost your power. You know, it's weird because the other plot line, the Xavier plot line, is set up and has to do with stuff that has happened.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as much as I get bored by bird people politics, it has track laid for it. Storm lost her powers, decided it was a crisis that had nothing to do with that, fell in love and fights a demon and gets her powers back, like all in the space of what feels like 20 minutes.
It's because it is 20 minutes. It's two halves of the episode, right? Like it's not particularly very long. And even like to further, like as she is being tortured by this, like, you know, demon owl in her mind, like just to make things even more complicated, Forge shows up with a fucking magic book and starts Doctor Stranging the demon into a portal. And you're like, what the fuck? And they're like, oh, this is your mother's book. And like, it tells of a cacti that will heal me. And I'm like, what are we talking about right now?
My mother tried to teach me magic and I tried not to pay attention, but you learned enough to summon or to, you know, dispel the fucking adversary.
Yeah. I got to magic 301, dispelling demons. And then I quit.
Yeah, exactly. That's all I need, you know. So he's like, there's a cacti we can go get. He says he doesn't want to die alone, like if he gets worse. And mm-hmm. she goes, we'll go together, my love. She's back on board the Forge train.
Yes. Back in space, Lilandra and Xavier are introduced to the court as the Empress and her consort. And Xavier asks her if they see him as her pet. And she tells him, you may bark later.
He goes, not entirely displeasing.
this is very horny for Saturday morning cartoons.
Weirdly kinky for Xavier.
Yeah. This you may bark thing was like a trend for a while of dropping to my knees.
May bark.
Yeah. And it's very, very weirdly horny.
Lilandra keeps Xavier in a dog cage.
You think so?
Like,
you think that's a bird cage? So. I mean, a bird cage.
A bird cage. Like, not to get into too much into their sex life, but she does control his ability to walk.
Mm.
That is a real, like, you know, that is a cage on your nuts.
Sure.
Like,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But direct master, like, submissive kind of situation. Yeah, I guess I can see that. Do you think she literally, like, could turn off the armor at any time? Like,
I think she probably could say, like, servants, remove this armor. I don't necessarily think she has, like, an app that does it, like those clip vibrating apps that people can get.
Oh, I accidentally turned off Deathbirds. Hold on. I got to reboot.
shit. I have too many Deathbirds open.
To allow Xavier to walk, it's a $3.99 in-app purchase.
Yeah. So they go to take the throne, and Araki, who's the little advisor nerd, starts saying like, hey, this is a bad idea. We're in the middle of a war.
Yeah.
You know, like, we're winning the war. And he's like, yeah, but Terrans. And then Deathbird flies in, you know, and we start getting into this thing that is using a lot of current slang and, you know, phrases.
Yes.
You know, like, it's very of the headline. So if you're like, thank you, Deathbird, for saying the quiet part out loud. Perhaps I will now, too. And stuff. And Deathbird says, oh, you're trying to make your little ghetto of a homeworld.
Ghetto of a homeworld. That's very...
yeah.
Yeah. And she invokes the challenge of whatever. Like, I didn't bother to even look up what this challenge was. It was just a bunch of consonant bird sounds.
Yes.
Basically, I guess they have a rule for this, saying that, like, oh, if you're going to marry this person, you have to erase all of their memories. And also, you need to be the person to do it. And I'm like, what?
It has to be a challenge of her choosing.
Yeah.
Which is a really bad right. Like, anyone who does it can just be like, do this impossible fucking thing.
I covered that TV show Merlin. One of the things that keeps happening in that show is people just come up and randomly like challenge King Arthur or Prince Arthur. Right. Yeah. Like, now we have to duel. And it's like, this is the heir to the fucking throne. Like, you can't just throw a glove at him and fight him. Like, this is ridiculous.
If I were ever in front of any kingdom and people are going to do something bad to me, I would just say like, I invoke the right of Denarke,
yeah,
or something like that, and then just get out of it. Like, it just feels like a get out of jail free card. Invoking rights is one simple trick.
Yeah, just any, like, just make up a right anytime that you need to. So this creates a situation, obviously, though, because now Xavier's mind must be purged of memories of Earth, and the Elandra has to be the one to do so. Xavier goes and walks and thinks about this, and he's met by the Guardian in front of a statue of two previous rulers.
Did you get a good look at the statue?
No. As I was typing, I kind of went back and forth, so I didn't get a close look.
They don't unlook like they're mid-coitus.
Oh, are they like, kind of wrapped up? Interesting.
Yeah, they're wrapped up in a way that, like, if there was no clothes, like, and you can't really see clothes because there's, like, waves and billowing cloaks. If neither of them has their junk protected, it would be a penetration position.
Okay. Interesting.
It's wild. Like, because these are all lovers. These are, like, a forced political marriage that is central to the Shi'ar way of thinking that they made a statue out of.
Sounds like 250-year-olds on the dance floor. That's what I'm hearing.
Very much so.
Just getting a little too excited in person. Guardian shows up and explains to Xavier that, like, these are two previous rulers, and this is kind of like the thesis of their entire culture is like, oh, they gave up themselves for the greater good. And Xavier calls this very Robert Kipling, and of course, Guardian, I'm not familiar with this reference. And they basically start talking about, Xavier talks about like, oh, I know a guy that used would have liked, really liked that. His name was Magnus, and I very much miss him. And I don't want to lose him. I don't want to, not remember him. And this is when Lalandra shows up and is like, oh, so you've made your choice. And Xavier's like, yeah, I don't actually want to forget everything about myself at all. So she says, well, hey, like, you know, if you do that though, like, number one, like, all you experienced on Earth was just hardships. Like, why wouldn't you want to forget that? And also, like, we can't be together if you don't do it unless I give up the throne. And that's kind of a big ask for me. Like, your memories seem
and that's
a lot
what
less,
she wants.
Yeah.
Right. Like, she's using this to leverage to get the throne.
That's what Deathbird wants. Absolutely. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, exactly. Not what I want. Yeah. Like, I'd be fucking sick. I'd love to quit. Basically, the Shi, and they're also saying the Shi'ar, in addition to just kind of doing this for the greater good, do it to subsume. You know, like, they take over. You know, people give up their own individuality to become part of this bigger whole.
And that kind of works on Xavier, who's like, okay, well, yeah, you know, you devoted yourself to me. Maybe it's time that I also devoted myself to you, and kind of agrees to go along with this. And this is now it's time to go into the cave of colonialism.
I hate this cave.
this cave full of old school munitions.
I fucking hate this cave. Like, they go to the cave and it has Union ordnance in it, and they're just like, fucking Mr. Exposition, just to tie this theme in at the very last minute, like, oh, this is used by Union troops during the Civil War, but it's used much earlier than that during the Plains War. And Storm's like, that war wiped out your people. And it's like, he fucking knows.
Yeah, he's got it. He knows.
He knows. He knows, Storm. So she has to go in here and find Super Cactus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and at one point she says, you know, I wonder if the machine not fixing me was a blessing because my power has inspired as much fear as they saved people. That's simply not true. Not true of how Storm has acted.
And I don't
at any point during this.
Not a single time. And like, also, like, we've never really seen her like it's the fear in her enemies, maybe, but like we haven't really seen, like, I mean, most of the time when she interacts with humans, it's like, oh, here's some rain for your crops. Like, that's what we see her as, Goddess Storm, right? Like, that's, it's such an out of left field thing. And then Forge like responds with like, well, that's what, you know, that's what I was told that the, you know, the Europeans did. Like, it wasn't their pelts or their guns. It was their white lies that they would tell themselves. And like, he gets interrupted in this, and I'm like, I don't want to hear what the rest of that conversation would have been.
Where are you going with this, buddy?
Yeah.
Like, it's just a thing, and it's actually like a problem I have with Storm in the comics too, especially now. Like, Storm's having a big glow up. Like, she's an Avenger now. She has solo stuff, and that's great because Storm is big. But Storm doesn't have flaws a lot of the time. Like, the way that they portray Storm is just like impeccable. Mm-hmm. She has like a phobia, you know, but back in the 80s, I feel like in the 80s and 70s, she had flaws. She doubted herself as a leader. She'd make mistakes and stuff. And at some point, she's just kind of perfect.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes this read really badly. And then when we get this part where she gets her powers back and like this long sequence of her like feeling her power, it looks really cool, but it doesn't feel earned because I don't feel like she's been through much.
Yes.
You know, I don't feel like she's actually done very much. So she has to go get the super cactus, and the super cactus is in a tunnel.
You will never guess, you know, so where the super cactus is. In a very, very tiny tunnel. Yes. For me, this would just be the inside of a spider, maybe. I don't know. Like, I'm trying to imagine like the Jeremy version of this, and I'm like, oh my God, I have to survive a house invasion before I can get the cacti.
You're at a party and everyone pulls out an acoustic guitar at once.
Just like the scene in Barbie. Right. Absolutely. Yeah. No, absolutely not. Oh man. Does everybody play in that abortion song by Live?
Everyone starts doing lightning crashes. A big sing along at the party.
Yeah, except it's just only they're only repeating the placenta line over and over again. Like, they're not singing any other part of that song.
It starts sounding like a placenta rain.
We go back up to space. Where Xavier is kneeling in front of the council preparing to undergo this rite, and they keep asking him questions like, are you ready to do this? And he's like, absolutely. Are you ready to do that? Yeah, absolutely. It's like, are you ready to renounce the X-Men? And then he hesitates, and that's when Deathbird shows up and is like, hey, I think that this dude is hesitating because he wants to force us to make Earth our ally, and how could we possibly trust a race that's descended from simians, and how could we mix our blood with his inferior freak fluid? Is a fucking amazing line. Absolutely love just fucking running down the inferior freak fluid train.
If that were on a can, I'd buy it.
Oh my God.
Like, if that were an energy drink, like, I'm pretty into inferior freak fluid. The inferior freak.
I'd love inferior fluid. Especially if it was one of those like white cans with just the black label, black text, like just straight up, like, no, just inferior. Absolutely. Give it to me. I don't need any ingredients.
I don't even know what flavor it is.
Yeah.
The part of her saying this is part, like with her saying ghetto earlier, it's part of what is so weird about this is that like the Shi'ar don't feel like aliens.
Yeah.
In this very much like Deathbird just talks like a racist. So for the metaphor, like Deathbird doesn't feel alien at all. This is supposed to be like, you know, light years away.
Exactly.
They deal with Kree and Skrull and things that we can't even conceive of. And she's just like, racism. And it's just, you know, it's weird.
Eons old, you know, civilization that we're dealing with. And we still got one of these guys running around. Right.
Yep.
She kind of demands that the council force her sister to stand down, saying that she's just as mad as her brother. Obviously, this is Deathbird's plan all around. All she's ever wanted was to get the throne from her sister.
Lalandra, her bluff got called.
Yeah,
Xavier even going through with the ritual even a little bit, like she didn't think was going to happen, so she has to make her play.
And Lalandra calls this, you know, sedition, and calls it, you know, being a traitor. So six guardian on her, and as he throws Deathbird across the room, that's where her little guys with lasers start shooting the other guys with lasers, and it turns into a brief battle. Xavier is thrown to the floor, and then he realizes, like, no, this is the opposite of what I wanted. And he says he's forgotten his power. He's forgotten how to use his power, and he starts sending out these telepathic waves. And all of a sudden, we go to the astral plane where he has set down Deathbird and Lalandra and Guardian for some reason. I feel like Guardian like does not deserve to be here whatsoever. but Arakai and like a couple of other people too, I think, into a classroom setting with a literal like blackboard and little classroom chairs. And this is hilarious. Like, I think the idea of this is very funny.
It's very good. It's also another thing taken from the new X-Men. run, him pulling people into this classroom. It's what, how he ultimately deals with Cassandra Nova.
Yes, absolutely.
In that, you know, a little callback to that. It's great. You know, Gladiator says, what's the meaning of this? And Gladiator, raise your hand. This is cute.
Great.
This is the best part of this episode.
Yeah, I think this is the funniest part and the best part of the episode.
Yeah. Storm finds Super Cactus, but loses her flashlight. She's alone. She's cramped. She's in the dark. Demon Owl comes for her. And the dialogue in this is just very cyclical and repetitive. You know, it's all just give up. You know, you're weak. You're a fool. Like anti-affirmations.
We've talked about how this the writing in this is very Claremont-esque sometimes, right? Like, I think it calls back to a lot of that stuff. And like, it almost makes me wonder if the writers weren't trying to do a little bit of that on purpose of like trying to get to that, like, quote unquote, purple prose thing.
Wait, have you read this story? Have you read Left?
Oh yeah. Death yeah. Yeah. Before? Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
It's only this.
It's all that this is. And I wonder if like, this is kind of like a homage, but like also like at the same time, it's not good. Like, it needs to be thinned down. Like, I don't want to hear a lot of this stuff. Like, it's just repetition after a certain point.
It's my least favorite thing about Storm are these long soliloquies and stuff. And it's funny when she's doing it, you know, before she sends a tornado at people.
Yes.
And, you know, says a really dramatic one-liner. But this stuff, there's not track laid for it, and I also don't think it's that interesting.
And then, like, the Demon Owl is like, I'll just give up, and I'll offer you a way to, like, live in your daydreams. And I'm like, I don't understand.
What does that mean?
What do you, like, I daydream about the weirdest shit. Like, I don't know, like, what is Storm daydreaming about? And I guess, like, the idea that she would be happy as a human is what we're supposed to get out of that. Like, it's just an idle flight of fancy, but like Storm is treating that like it's like she thought about a woman once and she's gay for life, right? Like that's not the way that this works at all.
Like, it's a storyline that would make sense for Rogue.
Yeah, like absolutely.
Somebody who would want to not have their gifts. Storm has always enjoyed her gifts. She was viewed as a goddess in Africa. Like, she's embodied her powers the whole time. This idea, like, oh, maybe it wasn't the neutralizer that got rid of your powers, it was your own self-doubt. Like, Storm, that's never been Storm.
Yeah, but the neutralizer, it's fucking weird. Really, really helped. So, like,
that is true.
Yeah. I have you know, I went to my doctor, and not to get like a little TMI on the podcast or anything, but, you know, normal checkup. This is my primary care physician or whatever. And she's like, you know, how you doing? Da, 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 da. And I was like, you know, I just have to thank you. Like, I kind of credit you for saving my life because, you know, when I was diagnosed, like, you sent me for that scan that we did that found all of this stuff. Like, you know, a lot of doctors may not have done that. They would have just been like, oh, your back hurts. Here's some pain pills. And she's like, I didn't save your life. Jesus saved your life. And I'm like, yeah, but you ordered the MRI. And I think that was Jesus didn't come down and like put it in the Ochsner app. So like, thank you for doing that. And
also, what a weird thing to say. Like, you know, appreciate the sentiment and trying to be humble, but like, just thank you.
Yeah, you get used to the Jesus stuff down here.
You're welcome.
She's a very sweet lady. Like, and I genuinely do like really, really like my doctor. Like, I think she's great. But like, yeah, sometimes the Jesus stuff is a little weird. You know. Anyway. Mm. So she, you know, the Demon Owl is like, I'll let you live in my daydream, and Storm's like, no. And this is the thing that finally convinces her to not believe the lie that she was telling herself and to re-embrace her powers. And she says, there's something about like the people like calling for thunder or something. She's like, let them thunder, for I am lightning. And we see like a storm building outside this cave. Poor Forge just like in the cave, like, what's going on? I guess, hopefully he has like an iPhone and some service. Like, he's got like TikTok or something he can look at. Storm is filled with lightning. I guess lightning blasts the Demon Owl, and she surges out of the top of this huge cave, and she surges like literally into space as we see this storm, this huge, you know, like billowing cloud. And they even like zoom out, so we see like a satellite in space looking at the Earth from afar. As she zooms out the top, and all of a sudden she has had a magical girl transformation. So she's no longer in the like pedestrian clothes that Forge gave her. She's back in her like black cape and suit.
Her new that one's new for this.
Like, new she for this. Been
in the white
yeah.
costume before. Yeah. Yeah. This is a costume that predates the white costume in the comics. This is like the late 80s.
Yeah. And now she has the full use of her powers again. So she flies back down to Earth. She flies next to some wild horses.
She scares the shit out of some horses. She does what she's always wanted to do, which is really freak out some fucking horses.
I can tell you, you know, we have horses, and like a guy mowing the grass will sometimes, like, I saw Meatball, Autumn's horse, literally run across the paddock because a cat showed up the other day.
Yeah.
So, like, I would imagine a woman flying in from outer space to run beside you would be a little freaky.
Lightning with horses are famously cool with.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, lots of thunder and lightning, which animals really, really love to be around. But yeah, she's reveling in her powers, just flying around. Presumably goes and picks Forge up. I don't know if Forge has to make his own way home or if they just meet up later.
Yeah, he figured it out. Yeah, she doesn't got time for that. Eventually, you go home, she's changed back into her overalls. And, you know, she says a little grateful for the demon. And Forge's like, what? He's like, well, you know, what is a demon but our darker nature is challenging us? Mm-hmm. And, like, again, this storyline didn't work.
No.
Yeah, that's not what happened. Luckily, somebody turns on the TV and they see about Genosha.
Yes. And, of course, Storm is horrified. Forge just looks like kind of resigned to the fact that this is going to happen. He almost looks kind of sad that he doesn't have a girlfriend anymore. He's like, oh, this is definitely...
He's got something going on. He's still recovering from his wound.
Forge, I got cock-blocked by Genosha, the mutant. Yeah. We get back over to Xavier, where he asks his class where the Shi'ar power comes from, and Deathbird jumps up, yelling about the skulls of our enemies. And Xavier gives her demerits, which is a classic kind of callback to the original X-Men series, animated series, and then puts a psychic apple in her mouth, which I also think is very, very funny.
Yeah. And he basically says that the Shi'ar have done colonialism. Mm-hmm. You know, their power is a harvest of stolen worlds. They conquered worlds before they became powerful enough, cutting them off of the knees, afraid that if they didn't submit to the Shi'ar, they'd eventually become as powerful as they were.
If you didn't think that if you were worried that they were, some people might not understand the harvesting cultures metaphor, they have a line art animation during this.
Yes.
Of just a bunch of weird alien horse heads that are buried up to the neck in the ground and like a Shi'ar like combine coming for them. And I'm like, I don't think he meant harvest the culture literally. Like, I don't think they were literal horse aliens growing from the ground and they were growing them like corn. Like, I don't think that's what's happening.
It's very literal,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And it's, you know, oh, the Shi'ar Empire is nothing but a snake oil racket. And Araki says, isn't the Terrans who say might makes right? And he goes, that's the rhyme who sells the lie. He's not saying that, isn't this what, he's calling you a hypocrite, Xavier. He's saying like, this is the same thing you do.
Yes.
He's not saying like, aren't you responsible for this? And Xavier kind of, this is like again, I don't like colonialism, but this is not a good lesson for a empire. Like him saying, you know, the coexistence is messy. It's worth trying and all of this stuff. And the idea, you know, at one point Lalandra says, I think our people have a hard time integrating this. And it's just, it's very naive to think that Xavier can just come in and be like, have you tried being woke? And the Shi'ar will just be like, yes.
Oh, man, no.
Like, oh, shit, no, it never occurred to us. Like, I get it, you know, but it's not very mature storytelling. Like, it's a little bit mature because a cartoon doesn't talk about colonialism.
Yeah.
But it kind of breaks down when you think about it more.
Absolutely.
In a way that bummed me out a little bit.
And I feel like the show even knows that because, like, we're going to quickly, like, pivot away from this. Like, it's the same thing that happened when the conversation about... that Forge and Storm were having, right? Where he's like,
yes.
Well, no, it's, you know, it's the white lie that you, and then all of a sudden something else happens.
Yes.
And it's like they wanted to like bring this topic up, but they realized like, oh, either A, we can't bring this into like a animated cartoon on Disney Plus, or B, like we just don't have the writing chops to like finish the storyline, right? Like it's kind of like the Star Wars thing where like, oh, we have to save our friends even if a billion people die.
It's not even the chops to finish the storyline. It's not what the show is about. Like it's a classic. I talk about this all the time and people get frustrated with me, but it's trying to be about too many things. It's an issue of focus, right? Like you can make the show about this, like, and then you would lay track for this and continue these themes. Instead, because the show does not take the airtime to actually fully develop or say anything about this, it kind of gets in this little drive-by hit.
Yeah.
You know, partway through, it's just like, yeah, you know, this is also bad. And I cannot stress enough, I agree that it's bad. I'm not arguing for colonialism. I'm saying that, like, I think it deserves more respect than this as a subject. Like, X-Men 97, one of the reasons why I think it blew everyone's minds is because it is full-throatedly about stuff, mm-hmm. right? Like, people were excited because this has strong theming and everything. And it went a little too far to kind of like include this theme that it does not have as much interest in following up on.
It's very, what is the word I'm looking for? Where like, you know, a child learns a lesson in a commercial, right? Like I'm going to like it, you know, Paul Rudd, like turning to look at the camera and telling you that cigarettes are bad, right? Like just that kind of, it's just very like, oh, racism is bad. Like, okay, well, like, are we going to talk about that? Like, are we going to do anything with that? Okay, no, we're just going to move on to, like, Xavier wants to go back home now. Like, we're not going to actually get into any of the theming or whatever that means, right? Like, we're just going to say the words that racism is bad and then move on. Yeah. Which, again, like, I think me and you would agree that racism is bad. I think 99.99% of the people that listen to this podcast would say racism is bad. I don't know who the 0.01%.
Hopefully
100. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Spotify has some weird metrics. That's true. All I'm saying. We're 87% men and 0.01% racist. That's our podcast stats. But yeah, like, I think that, you know, we all agree with that, but I think if they don't spend a little bit of time, like, actually talking about it or developing it, any of it just doesn't go anywhere. And again, like, it even feels weird because he starts talking about, like, you want to know a secret? Coexistence is messy. And as he's like, start having this conversation about how we're all children of the atom, we just get completely sidetracked because his astral plane is overtaken by the events of Genosha, right? Like, he looks around and everybody in the classroom is turned to skeletons, and a huge, gigantic Gambit.
Gambig.
Which is somebody's sexual fantasy, not mine. Yeah.
Not a sexual fantasy, but if we could get more Gambig.
You need, like, a Gambig. Like, I had an Optimus Prime as a kid, like, where a bunch of other Transformers fit into. Like, I don't know if you remember that guy.
Yes.
And I feel like I've Gambig where other X-Men would fit inside of his body. Yes. It would be real fun.
Or a Gambig that could turn into a big rig.
That too. Yeah. And this giant, this Gambig, turns into a skeleton as well. And Xavier reels at finally having, I guess, heard the news of Genosha psychically, right? Like, he's getting the psychic feedback from what happened.
And the point, basically, is, like, I've been wasting all this time in space while shirking my responsibilities, and this happened. You know, they're like, oh, this is going to prove Deathbird right. He's like, I will not abandon my kind. I have to do this. Again, also a weird kind of pull. Like, you weren't, you know, abandoning your responsibilities, you wouldn't have stopped Genosha from happening, you weirdo.
Yeah.
You know, and the Empire, like, part of one of the things X-Men likes to play really fast and loose with is whether other alien cultures matter. You know, like, it should, when earlier in the episode, Lalandra says Xavier, like, oh, if my sister gets control, think about what that'll mean for the universe. You know, there are billions and billions upon trillions of people that just don't happen to be humans. Like, you don't know them, but do they matter or not?
Yeah.
You know, like, you were just telling this story about how the Shi'ar fucks these people up and, like, takes over their cultures, makes them assimilate and everything like that. And now you're saying, actually, fuck this. Like, the six people I know are in trouble.
Yeah, yeah. My team, my children. Like, I have to go back. I have to not abandon my kind, which is, like, you know, conservatively, like, a fraction of people in the universe.
Yes.
So,
it's understandable, but also not, again, just not what it's about. Like, it just ends up kind of clanging.
Yeah. And again, like, it also just feels like short-circuiting the point that he was trying to make, right? Like, oh, like, we don't really want to finish out anything that we're talking about here, so we're just going to put Xavier back on Earth again with the X-Men. And, you know, that's fine. That's what I wanted to happen anyway. Like, I'm glad we got there, right? Like,
so, yes, I don't care about the Shi'ar, but, like, yeah. if you're Xavier and you're thinking about the moral calculus of stopping the Shi'ar from being colonialist versus, like, saving the X-Men.
Yes.
You know, what ultimately is going to do more good for the universe? You could stop, you know, the English Empire in the 1600s.
Yeah.
You know, like, imagine.
Or you're a friendly band of pirates in Pirates Cove. Like,
guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, it's kind of a classic Star Wars problem. Like, the movies fight with this all the time of just, like, oh, it's important to save our friends. But, like, also, like, if you really do any sort of critical thinking about the Empire at all. I don't know. Somebody told me recently that there was, like, Luke was responsible for, like, 1.5 million deaths on the Death Star. And I'm just like, I mean, that's, like, they were all kind of space. They all opted in. Like, most of them were space Nazis.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know.
It's also just stealing the point from Clerks. Like, that's real old school. Like, 1992 or whatever, Clerks, they're talking about, like, contractors and stuff being on the Death Star.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Like, that's right. I haven't seen Clerks in fucking forever, dude. That's right.
That's a real, like, 90s stoner Gen X. Like, was the person who was telling you about that, Jenny Garofalo?
Oh, I can't believe I was posting on a message board with Janine Garofalo and I didn't even know it.
Yeah.
So we finish with these two plots and we have one last stinger where we see Bolivar Trask running down a road, obviously being chased by something that he's terrified of, a laser blaster coming after him or something. And it turns out it's actually Mr. Sinister. And turns out Bolivar Trask gave his genetic code to Mr. Sinister so that he can control the Sentinels. And Mr. Sinister says, everything will be okay as long as you remember to trust in Sinister. Kind of setting up like Mr. Sinister as the big bad, which we all kind of know that that's not going to be the case, which is really, really fun. Yeah. So I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, a little bit of a misdirect.
Delve into that. Yeah.
It's worth noting too, like after this episode, we're entirely back on track.
Yes.
Like everything after this, it's one more standalone episode and then the three-part finale. And all of it's fucking sick as hell.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Some episode had to be the worst one.
There's got to be a worse something, right? Like there's not everything can be great. So, and sticking, like I said, sticking this one behind the best episode of the series, right? Like I think it was probably actually kind of smart.
Yes.
And it also sets you up to like really genuinely care for the stuff that's going to happen in the next episode, which is a lot of fun. Like I think we're going to have a lot of fun. So.
They put the Mojo episode before that one. Mm-hmm. And this afterwards, like it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks Sarah for listening.
We appreciate it. Thank you for continuing to listen. If you want to support us, you can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. Donating every month gets you, I mean, just literally like thousands and thousands of hours of exclusive content. Like it's insane.
A lot of stuff.
You guys were running like discounts or something over there for a while. Like I saw some of that.
Patreon allows us to do like coupons now.
That's so weird.
So when we did the individual feed, we had a promotion for new listeners. That is, as I like to say on everything to Guppy, Cole shit. that's stuff that Cole deals with. And I don't, and I said, yeah, that's a separation of our duties.
That's not, it's just said affectionately, not.
Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's just, I don't know very much about it because I don't, that's not my job.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, my job's other stuff. Speaking of, well, this won't come out in time probably, but if you were happen to be in the Midwest Gaming Classic and said hi to me and Cole, thanks.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you were in Boston, I'll be at a Supernatural convention meeting Jensen Ackles. So if I met you there,
hell yeah.
Thank you.
That's yeah. It's gonna be great.
I'm gonna try to give Jensen Ackles COVID. So thank you everybody for listening. We'll see you next week with more X-Men.